Late in the afternoon, Mr. McGargle called from the funeral home and asked if I could hustle over. Mr. and Mrs. Fargerson were there, picking out a casket and making the final arrangements. As I had done many times, I met them in Parlor C, the smallest viewing room. It was seldom used. Pastor J.B. Cooper of the Maranatha Primitive Baptist Church was with them, and he was a saint. They leaned on him for every decision. At least twice a year, I met with a family after the tragic death of a loved one. It was almost always a car wreck or some gruesome farm injury, something unexpected. The surviving members were too shocked to think clearly, too wounded to make decisions. The strong ones simply sleepwalked through the ordeal. The weak ones were often too numb to do anything but cry. Mrs. Fargerson was the stronger of the two, but the horror of finding her son with half his head blown off had reduced her to a shuddering ghost. Mr. Fargerson just stared at the floor. Pastor Cooper gently extracted the basics, many of which he already knew. Since his spinal injury 15 years earlier, Lenny had dreamed of going to heaven, of having his body restored, of walking every day hand in hand with his Savior. We worked on some language to this effect, and Mrs. Fargerson was deeply appreciative. She handed me a photo, one of Lenny sitting by a pond with a fishing pole. I promised to put it on the front page. As always with grieving parents, they thanked me profusely and insisted on hugging me tightly as I tried to leave. Mourners cling to people like that, especially at the funeral home. I stopped by Pepe's and bought an array of Mexican carryout, then drove to Lowtown, where I found Sam playing basketball, Miss Callie asleep inside, and Esau guarding the house with his shotgun. Eventually, we ate on the porch, though she only nibbled at the foreign food. She wasn't hungry. Esau said she had eaten little during the day. I brought my backgammon board and taught Sam the game. Esau preferred checkers. Miss Callie was certain any activity that involved the rolling of dice was patently sinful, but she wasn't up to a lecture. We sat for hours deep into the night and watched the rituals of Lowtown. School had just turned out for the summer. The days were longer and hotter. Buster, my part-time pit bull, drove by every half hour. He would slow in front of the ruffins. I'd wave as if things were fine. He'd ease away and return to the driveway of the Hokut house. A patrol car parked two doors down from the ruffin house and sat for a long time. Sheriff McNatt had hired three black deputies, and two of them had been assigned to keep an eye on the home. Others were watching as well. After Miss Callie went to bed, Esau pointed across the street to the darkened screen porch where the Braxtons lived.
"Tully's over there," he said, "watching everything."
"He told me he'd stay up all night," Sam said. Lowtown would be a dangerous place to start a gunfight. I left after 11, crossed the tracks, and drove the empty streets of Clanton. The town pulsed with tension, with anticipation, because whatever had been started was far from over.